Well, good morning, and thank you all very much for coming to the National Clean Energy Project Renewables Program. My name's Tim Wirth, President of the United Nations Foundation. This event that we have today has been designed primarily by the Center for American Progress and a number of allies, particularly Senator Harry Reid and Mr. Boone Pickens, and a variety of the remarkable coalition that we have around the table. This is a follow-up on the National Clean Energy Summit that occurred in August of 2008 in Nevada, hosted by Senator Reid. Last August, the group that came together at that point identified inadequate access to transmission as a major barrier to renewable energy. And the goal of today is to identify the policies that are necessary to address that problem. We had an opening breakfast upstairs for sort of introductory and a lot of comments across the board, and touched upon probably the central issues that we have to think about: siting, finance, intergovernmental cooperation, some very complicated and thorny jurisdictional issues, and of course issues of national security piled on the assumption that we can develop the technologies necessary to do the job. So we have a multifaceted, many-sided problem. But rather than spending more time admiring the problem, the purpose of today is to see what we can do to break through and lead to real solutions. This follows President Obama's signing last week of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which includes significant funding for the electricity grid and other sustainable energy. Decisions related to the grid, final comment that I will make, decisions related to the grid have really been plagued by two broad themes. One, while everybody agrees that we have to work on the grid, and that comes from just about every constituency, there is terrific disagreement over how those stakes can all come together in a single kind of policy and a single kind of legislation that can move us forward with the dispatch that's necessary. Until now, we have lacked the coalition necessary to move this issue. And the second problem is that this has a lot of politics intertwined in it, but we have a constituency on the outside that looks at this issue as I would call it, one of the most anesthetizing issues there is. If you ask a constituency to say, what do you think about the grid, they go blank right away and move on to the next question. And one of our jobs is also to make sure that we get this as high in the lights as possible, and that's again why we are so indebted to Boone Pickens, Steve Bing, and others for having helped us to get where we are today. Both of these are coming online. I'd like to begin today by asking the Majority Leader, Senator Harry Reid, who convened the August session and has been setting the table in the United States Senate and the Congress for future action. Senator Reid, perhaps you could begin our morning with comments about where we are and where you believe we can be going. Senator Harry Reid.
Tim, thank you very much. It's so good to be with you again. We had our days and we were able to talk about them a little bit this morning of our glory days in the House and the Senate. We had such a good time. We were younger then, but we sure knew a lot, didn't we? Yeah. I am so happy to have you here, President Clinton. My mentor from my early days in the House, Al Gore, who talked me into one of the best things that I was ever talked into, being on his subcommittee on the Science and Technology Committee. We had a wonderful time there. Still, some of the things we started there are still ongoing. So very, very happy to have you here today. My partner in all we do in the Congress, Speaker Pelosi, who has been such an inspiration to me and the American public. The person I'm looking to do so much of my work in the Senate is Jeff Bingaman, who's here with the Energy Committee working as he will with the appointment made by the Speaker to our friend Massachusetts Senator Ed, Massachusetts House Member Ed Markey, who's been a remarkable advocate and helped us from the very beginning on nuclear waste when he was a lone wolf in the House crying foul. We appreciate that very much. I want to just point out one person in Nevada, Michael Yakari, head of NV Energy. We started out a year and a half ago or so, bumping heads a little bit on some coal plants that were going to be built there. But we worked through some issues there, and I want to extend my appreciation. He really has set a marker for how others should approach this issue. NV Energy, led by Michael Yakari, chose to postpone construction of that coal plant and increase its investment in Nevada's wealth of renewable resources. His country in the West is truly a trailblazer, and I appreciate that very much. We have, of course, John Podesta, who is someone, as Speaker Pelosi said, sets the gold standard, and that's certainly true for his work in public service. He's a remarkable human being. We appreciate his lending his name and his organization to this event. 70% of the oil that we use comes from places like Venezuela and the unstable Middle East. Last year, we spent about $500 billion, $500 billion, giving money to these countries for oil, which has created a three-pronged problem for us, a three-pronged threat. What it does to our economy, what it does to our national security, and of course, what it does to our environment. And the first step in approaching this in a big-time way was the economic recovery package. Money has been invested. It's there. With the signing of the bill in Denver last Tuesday, this money is already being sent throughout our economy. It was a giant step in the right direction. $11 billion alone for the national energy grid, or as some said, like Secretary Chu, a national highway to produce, to transmit energy. So we all must partner and focus on energy investments and moving energy producers to where the power is needed. I'm going to introduce a bill this week that's going to do exactly that. It's going to be, anything we do in Washington is going to be done on a bipartisan basis, as we showed on the work that we've done already this year. With President Obama reaching out to the Republicans, there may not be in the sight of many any short-term gain, but the long-term gain from his reaching out is going to pay dividends for many years to come. So, Tim, thank you very much for moderating this. You're someone that is certainly a remarkable person, and we appreciate your good work.
Senator Reid, thank you very much. We are honored to be joined this morning by former President Bill Clinton. Mr. President, thank you for being here. Harry Reid points out the progress that's being made. Maybe you could enlighten us a little bit. Why did this take so long, and how do we sustain this momentum?
We didn't have the votes before. Boone Pickens and I were talking on the way down here about how one of the best things that's happened in the last couple of months, these miserable last 4 or 5 months, is that this coalition has held together and intensified its conviction in the face of falling prices for oil and coal. In other words, nobody changed their position because we got it finally. There's a glue here holding people together, understanding that we have to build a new economy. And if we don't, it'll compromise our national security. More fundamentally, it will end vast prospects of civilization, for at least for our grandchildren or great-grandchildren, and it's the best way to bring our economy back. So I think that's, to me, is one of the bright spots of these last few tough months. This coalition held together. Every time before, in the last 35 years we've started this, we passed a bill in Arkansas when I was Attorney General, which authorizes everything that California did, you know, in terms of decoupling and everything else. And my governor's real happy now because he doesn't have to pass any bills through the legislature to do what he needs to do. And nobody ever did anything with it. Every time oil dropped, people said, give me my Hummer back. And that's not what they're saying now. We want America to be independent. We want to protect the future of our children and grandchildren, and we know this is the key to our job growth. So that's good. The only point I made at the breakfast I'd like to make again, Senator, is first I want to thank the Speaker and Senator Reid and President Obama and everybody, but Secretary Chu, Secretary Salazar, everybody who's behind this. Carol Browner, I'm really proud of you. This economic recovery bill has good things in it, and I'm grateful as a citizen. And the second thing I would like to do is to thank John Podesta, who has been great at this. But thirdly, I'd like to ask you all to help the Congress now and the President and these departments. We have to maximize the impact of this economic recovery money. And I hate to be like a Johnny One Note, but the sexiest things are to talk about what we're going to do in clean energy. The big short-term gains in jobs and in greenhouse gas reductions with technologies that are available right now are in energy efficiency advances, in building retrofits, in smaller packaging, and a gazillion things. It's the kind of thing that my foundation works on all over the world. Please don't overlook that. Let's don't undersell the efficiency investment angle. Harry mentioned, or John mentioned, I guess, Steve Bing. I was at the hangar his company built out in Burbank. It's a carbon positive building, produces 110% of the energy that the building uses at full utilization from clean sources. And everybody knows a lot of it's solar panels, but a lot of it's because of the conservation technologies in the building. And I think that if we're not careful, we will undersell that. Year before last, Goldman Sachs issued a study that said that if we, the Chinese, the Indians, and the Russians, achieve the energy efficiency level of the Japanese, that would take the world 25% of the way home to reducing greenhouse gas emissions 80% by 2050. And yet, there is never, in my opinion, enough thought given to how to do that. And I'm biased because we work on these projects all over the world in my foundation, but we need to think about, for example, is there some way these bank reforms can be harmonized with the stimulus, the economic recovery funds? For example, you get 6,000 jobs directly for every $1 billion you spent in building retrofits or other efficiency efforts. If you put $1 billion into an SBA-like loan guarantee program, banks need to start lending money again. They might actually lend money on condition that the way we do it, that the at least to public entities, that the loans are repaid only from utility savings, backed up first by a guarantee from the energy service organization that organized a project. If you back that up with an SBA-like loan guarantee, you could have a multiple of 10 to 20, just like the SBA does, and give a super safe loan for the banks that are interested in beginning to loan again, and maybe create 10 or 20 times as many jobs, at least in the places where this is available. These are the kind of things I would like to ask you all to think about. We owe it to the American people now, all the rest of us, after the President and the Congress have done this good thing for us, to maximize the impact of these stimulus funds in a way that generates the largest number of jobs and the most rapid reduction in greenhouse gases.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. As we are all discussing domestic policy, the stimulus package, transmission, and related questions, hovering over us, of course, is the looming climate crisis. And no individual has done more to remind us of our responsibilities and our opportunities than Vice President Gore. Mr. Vice President, maybe you could help us think about this issue in the context of our global responsibilities and the pressing science that is upon us, the question that we all have to keep in mind and the burden that we carry is to make sure that the policy keeps up with the science and what it tells us we must do.
Well, thank you, Tim. I want to listen more than talk here because there's so much talent, so much knowledge in this room. I do want to acknowledge your leadership, and as I said upstairs, thank you for the chance we've had to work together on this for so long, and acknowledge John Podesta's leadership, really an awesome job, John, and as head of the transition team for the new president, this incredibly impressive fast start is partly due to what you and your colleagues in the transition did. I want to congratulate the members of the administration here, and first and foremost, President Obama, for an extraordinary job and for all of the words of criticism you'll hear from one direction or another in 30 days to get this amazing package. And I speak particularly of the green portions of the stimulus, but I want to compliment the entire package. It's really an amazing accomplishment. And Secretary Chu and Secretary Salazar, Carol Browner, congratulations. And then it never would have happened, obviously, except for the extraordinary leadership of Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and their colleagues, some of whom are here at this table. It was an amazing feat to see the Congress move so swiftly and to get so many things right on the renewable energy provisions, on the smart grid, the attention to detail. And the details are so important on this, and there are more of them that lie just ahead, and that's why this session is so valuable. Just briefly, Tim, to answer your question, and there is a genuine world-class scientist here at the table with us, so I'm going to tread carefully. But my reading of the science over the last 20-plus years that the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has been producing these reports, there is a stark pattern that shouts out at us. They always come out with these reports that have ranges of estimates, best case, worst case, medium case. In most instances, when they go back and observe the CO2 emissions and the melting of the ice and the various other things, a few years later they come back and they say, well, it is right at or above the worst case projection last time. There are feedbacks in this system. There is the potential for the melting of ice in the Arctic to dramatically increase the absorption of heat in the Arctic Ocean, which then raises the specter of thawing the permafrost in the territory around the Arctic, which contains as much carbon, if turned by microbes into methane as it thaws. That amount alone is equal to all of the global warming pollution that's up there now. And there are other feedbacks as well. So the science is continuing to warn us that we really do have a planetary emergency. And that phrase still sounds shrill to many ears. We are not used to thinking in these terms. But the generation that's coming on after us will look back and assess what we did or did not do. They'll ask one of two questions: either what were you thinking, how could you have done this, or how'd you find the courage to step up to the plate and do the right thing? And what makes me so hopeful and optimistic now is that the United States of America is stepping up to the plate. That's what the real meaning of this these developments of the last month and more are all about. And it's so important because even though we are not the most populous nation in the world, we still have the strongest economy, and more importantly, we still have the core of values that, along with other things, has given us a unique position in history. Now, this may come off as, we're almost all of us, I guess, are, I don't see any foreigners here, but we're all vulnerable to being, proud of our country. But it is an objective fact that the United States of America, our country, is the only nation that can lead the world when a crisis like this looms. And in order to lead the world, we have to restore the momentum and the can-do spirit that Boone Pickens exemplifies this. Let's go and let's do this. But we've got to focus on two strategic goals simultaneously. We have got to reduce global warming pollution, principally CO2. And we have got to wean ourselves from this dangerous overdependence on foreign oil. So the three crises, the climate crisis, the economic crisis, which is on everybody's mind as we meet here, and the national security challenges exemplified by our continuing involvement in Iraq and the continuing threat to the world economy if this huge pool of recoverable oil reserves suddenly became unavailable or fell under the control of malignant forces, then that would be a dangerous thing. The common thread running through all of them is our ridiculous overdependence on dirty, dangerous, expensive carbon-based fuels. Grab that thread and pull on it, and all three of these crises begin to unravel, and we hold in our hands the answer, which is a generational one-off investment to switch from an energy infrastructure that's based on these carbon-based fuels to a new infrastructure that's based on fuels that are free forever, the sun and the wind and geothermal, and ingenuity, efficiency, and conservation. The energy's not free. We have to build the infrastructure. And the one single most important infrastructure jobs-creating program, in addition to the insulation and the retrofitting and the efficiency, is to build this unified national smart grid. And some people around this table have been talking about it a long time, but that will open up a whole new universe of options to take the renewable electricity and build it out and get it to the places where it's used. Final point. We've seen the oil price roller coaster, and as long as our economy is shackled to that, our political will is vulnerable to being suddenly diminished when oil goes down in price. But Chinese demand and Indian demand, the slowing rate of new discoveries, this roller coaster is headed for a crash, and we're in the front car. So now is the time to shake off the temptation to say, oh, oil prices are down again, and just keep on going. We need to get the market to work for us by putting a price on carbon. So the combined measures of a renewable energy standard and a cap and trade measure, and a renewable energy standard is the best is one of the best ways to reduce down to get the a cap that allows us to go to Copenhagen this December and really play the role in leading the world toward this pivotal shift. When President Kennedy in 1961 announced that we would go to the moon and come back safely in 10 years, a lot of people said it couldn't be done. But 8 years and 2 months later, Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. And on that day, the average age of the engineers in mission control in Houston was 26, which means that when he issued that challenge, their age was 18. And this new generation is looking to the people in this room and in this administration and in this Congress to make sure the United States of America redeems the promise of self-government and control of our own destiny. And I'm really happy to be a part of this. Look forward to the discussion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President, for that eloquent statement. For those of you who would like a quick tutorial on the urgency of the question, I don't know if you saw this last weekend, the Los Angeles Times, Margot Roosevelt, had a remarkable story on feedback loops in the Arctic and the impacts of that. It is a very brief window for everybody to see the crisis that we are in and the urgency of the needed action and urgency of leadership by the United States of America. Pulling her colleagues together has been a major chore for Speaker Pelosi, who's done it with her usual grace and determination. Madam Speaker, we're so pleased to have you with us today. Thank you very much for joining us and for your great work.
Thank you very much, Tim, and thank you for your leadership on these and so many other issues over the years. Thank you for bringing us together to John Podesta, as the leader said, the gold standard. Everything he does excellently, and I thank you for what you have done and what you are going to do in relationship to the issues on the grid. What an honor it is to be here with my colleague, Harry Reid. What a fighter he is for the issues that we're talking about here, issues that are important to our children and their future. It's an honor to serve with you, Harry. Thanks for the invitation to be here today. And I know we're all thrilled to be in the presence of our former president, Mr. President Clinton, and Vice President Al Gore. Broad in their thinking, specific in their suggestions, really an inspiration to us all. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Vice President, you wrote the book. You taught us early on, and you continue to do that and to inspire us. He sets a high standard, and we're all struggling to keep up with that. But let me tell you what we are doing about it very briefly, and why I thank all of you for what you have done and what you will do, as I mentioned to John. We have to have an enormous vision about this as we go out to the American people to talk to them about it, because there's always some reason why it isn't in someone's interest to get this done, whether it's local, state, or at the federal level. I like to think about the fact that 200 years ago, well, 200 years ago in 2008, so 201, the president then, Thomas Jefferson, had a vision for America, about building the infrastructure of America. It was called the Gallatin Project after his Secretary of the Treasury. And it was an idea that we had to build into the Louisiana Purchase and the Lewis and Clark expeditions to follow that, to build the infrastructure. So it was the Erie Canal and the Cumberland Road and all of those kinds of things that built America. But they thought of it on a big scale. And many of these projects flowed from that. 100 years later, on the centennial, Teddy Roosevelt had his own vision. And to celebrate, he established building the infrastructure of America. The National Park Service was the centerpiece of that. Last year, we didn't have that vision in the White House. Now we do. And just a few weeks ago, on the steps of the Capitol, President Obama said, We will harness the sun and the wind and the soil to fuel our cars and run our factories. And just a few weeks after that, he signed a bill into law that would do just that. And part of building the infrastructure, which this was a continuation of, is the building the infrastructure of the grid. So essential. It's actually essential just if we had no fresh ideas about all the good things it could do. But in our legislation that was signed into law, as Harry mentioned, as though you know, and so appropriately in Colorado, a lead state in this regard, Mr. Secretary, in doing so, we not only captured the grid, but so much else in the bill that contributes to what you challenge us, Mr. Vice President, global climate crisis, as well as reducing our dependence on fossil fuels. With the language about renewable energy resources will mean nothing if there's not a grid to transmit it. They go together. And I, since the Vice President's here, I'll mention that another infrastructure project that was mentioned at the breakfast was the building of the interstate highway system by President Eisenhower. That was had the vision of protecting America. It was a jobs project. It did build infrastructure. But it had a national security purpose. And Al Gore's dad, Senator Gore, Sr., was the lead author of that legislation in the Congress. So there's a lot of history in this room. As the president mentioned what he did as governor in Arkansas, a lot of history that is going to serve the future well. So as we go forward with this, understand there are obstacles. I know that's one of your things. There are obstacles. The status quo folks will try to stop this. When I became speaker, when we won and we took over the Congress 2 years ago, we had a vision and a flagship issue was addressing global warming and reducing our dependence on foreign oil and fossil fuels. And I formed a select committee to do just that, and Ed Markey has chaired it since then. He also now chairs the Energy Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce. So he wears two very important hats in this regard. And he was a very important part, along with Mr. Waxman, in making sure that in this energy bill, and George Miller, that making sure in this recovery package, we didn't just have the grid, and we had the renewable energy resources, but we also had the resources to invest in the education of scientists and the rest as part of an innovation agenda. And throughout it, with the leadership of Secretary Chu helping us, I would say there are four words that describe what we did there and what we intend to do as we go forward. Science, 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 and science. Science and the technologies and the engineering to build this grid right. Science to do the renewable energy piece. Science to make sure that when, as we do it, we have a healthier America, and the science. Mr. Van Jones is here to see, to help make these green jobs, educate these kids, make these green jobs, change our economy altogether. So we have a lot of hope riding on what you were doing, because we put the money in, but I think rightfully so, we did not proscribe how this would happen. We did say we were seeking a plan to do it. I'm so glad our friends in labor are here today, because they've been so much of an important part of making sure that this was about the four things that we always say. It's about, this is essential, about growing our economy, creating these new green jobs, about the national security issue, first and foremost, that the president mentioned. This is a national security issue. We must reduce our dependence on foreign oil. It's a health and an environmental health issue to improve the quality of our air and the health of our children. That's why I'm glad last year on our energy bill we had the first change in CAFE standards, thanks to Mr. Markey, in over 30 years. Why? You ask, why? Why did it take over 30 years? But again, change, though. National security for our economy, for the health and of our children and the clean environment that we owe them, and then fourth, it's our moral responsibility to preserve this planet. That's why when we sit around and have our discussions on this subject, Mr. Vice President, as you know, we have business and labor, we have concerned scientists and evangelicals. They have told us that this is God's planet, and we, those of us who share that view, think we have a moral responsibility to save it. But as we do, we must be careful of the impact that it has on poor people. So this grid issue just is central to all that we do, and we are very eager to hear what the outcome of your deliberations are. The world is watching. We were just, Mr. Markey and others, we were in Afghanistan. They want to see, they have energy problems. They want to see how we take the lead. We were in Italy talking about the EU and what they are doing, but this, none of it really works on the global climate piece unless America takes the lead. The world is crying out for that. Even when I was at the Vatican, I congratulated the Pope because Vatican City is carbon neutral. So again, people are doing their part, but we must lead the way. I think that as we do the grid and we address the renewable energy resources and the need to transmit them, we must do the renewable electricity standard to our highest possible standard. President Obama has said 25 by 25. We have 15 by 20, very modest. We'd rather obviously have it stronger, and Al Gore challenges us to 100% by 2020. But again, we must have that strongest piece. That, the renewable energy resource, the rebuilding of the grid, which is they're tied together, and reversing climate change, in my view, must be part of the same package if we're going to accomplish what we need to do to take the country in a new direction on renewable, clean energy. I see the words renewable, freedom, abundant, security, clean, all of that. So on your national clean energy project, I wish you tremendous success. A great deal is riding on it, and we look forward to seeing what lines of communication you take us on as we, but to use a pun, know your power, the power of all of you and your outside constituency groups to be, as the president said, to hold together as we go forward, or else we will have a missed opportunity, which would be a tragedy, instead of sending the clearest message that we understood our responsibility, had the wisdom to proceed so that future generations will have a cleaner planet and judge us for what we did rather than regret that we missed that opportunity. So thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts about how we intend to proceed in the House on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Speaker Pelosi. It is heartening for America and for the world to have the kind of political leadership that we see here from Majority Leader Reid and from the Speaker. It's really an extraordinary shift and change. if the inside leadership is extremely important, so is the outside framework in which we operate. And I want to pay a special thanks to Boone Pickens and to Steve Bing, among others here, who have really helped to put a frame around this issue publicly. Boone, could you share with us some thoughts from your perspective, which has been very aggressive and certainly very public on the issue? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. I hope that there is a camera here and has me between the two Nobel leaders. It would be very, very exciting if my mother was still alive to see that, but it also would be very exciting for the faculty at Oklahoma State University to see me in this chair between these two honorees. I would like to mention, you know, you and I almost solved corporate America's problems back in the 80s on those hearings that we had, but there were others that were there that didn't. You all don't know what we're talking about, but back in the 80s, well, Senator Worth and I had real ideas about how to fix corporate America, but we didn't get it done. But maybe now it's going to happen. But anyway, I'm happy to be, very happy to be at this energy summit. And we're going to have an energy plan for America. I am convinced of that. In 40 years, no energy plan. And now it's going to happen. And I've been around to see all this. I'm 80 years old, so I've trooped through it. I've trooped through the halls. I've tried to get things done. Everybody was always nice to me but this time something is going to happen. But we've got to reduce the dependency on foreign oil. I mean, the grid, sure. The renewables, sure. I mean, those are set, I think, in the stimulus plan, and it's going to happen. But this is the time to solve the foreign oil problem. In 2008, we imported nearly 70%, which Senator Reid mentioned, but $475 billion is what we spent for foreign oil. We know that we can do a better job than that. Can you get it all back? Probably, you know, the Canadian oil is very friendly to us, and that's North America. But one thing, remember, on the oil we get from Mexico, which is 1,400,000 barrels a day, that oil is projected to decline, deplete, and the Mexicans, will be importers in 5 years. So that 1,400,000 barrels, where do we go for that? We're going to have to go to OPEC for it, is where we'll have to go. And I want to stop that, if we possibly can, that we never go to the point where we have to take up the slack that came from Mexico and have that go. Okay, we in January, even with the price of oil down like it was $17 billion is what it cost us. Look at the Russian situation on natural gas just recently. Maybe you've seen my ads. I'm back on with ads again. Damn, those things are expensive. And the Russians, they cut off the Ukrainians and Europe and had a squabble over it, and it truly got down almost on their knees. I was reading it in the paper every day. We got to have the gas. We're cold. Give us the gas. And Europe is dependent on Russia for natural gas. We are dependent on foreign oil. That same thing can happen to us. And I looked at that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that could be us at some point. Okay, we do have a resource to solve the problem. We've got to solve the problem with our own resources. And what are they? Okay, we've got the renewables working. That's going to work. But power from wind or solar or geothermal does not operate an 18-wheeler. It does not operate an 18-wheeler. Get realistic about it. What resource do we have that would do the 18, move the 18-wheeler? And you've heard me say before, I don't like R&D at 80 years old. It seems like it's going to be too long to get an answer. So I go to operating models, and I have an operating model sitting behind me back here, David Freeman, who runs the Port of Los Angeles, and he is changing the Port of Los Angeles over to clean trucks. because he can't stand the air quality he has to deal with out there. But that's an operating model for me. Thank you, David. A complete plan includes the domestic source for transportation, build out of the wind and solar, have a 21st century grid, retrofit homes and buildings to energy efficiency, and I know we've covered the grid here. I mean, we've talked about it, and there's going to be more said about it. But I am very hopeful that, even more than that, I know it's going to happen. It's got to happen. I'm running out of time. And so it's got to happen before I go. But we are going to have an energy plan for America. Thank you.
Boone, thank you very much, and we'll send that picture to the provost at Oklahoma
State.
Very
good.
And, he was horrified about past history. You've made up for it all today.
Oh, yeah.
John Podesta has been not only the gold standard, but just a remarkable conceptual and political figure for all of us. John, thank you for bringing us all together.
Thank you, Tim. And I want to come back to the question you posed to President Clinton, which is what's different than the last 35 years. And I'd say after this beginning, it's that we have new leadership to move this issue forward. And I just want to commend all the people who have spoken. It's just inspiring to think that we can get the job done, President Clinton, Vice President Gore, Speaker Pelosi, the President, President Obama, and his great team that's here, Boone Pickens. And I want to make a special acknowledgement of Senator Reid, who got us going on this project last August in a forum that we did in Las Vegas. And I think a lot of the ideas that were on the table at that forum made their way into this recovery bill, and the ideas that are going to be put on the table today will make their way, I hope, into the effort that Senator Bingaman is going to lead. Look, I think we have to recognize that we're living through a terrible recession. We've got volatile oil prices. We've got a dependence on fossil fuels. And, of course, the tremendous, almost existential threat of global warming that the Vice President spoke about. People say to me all the time recently, we've done so much, this bill's so big, how can we do more? And I think the answer to that is we can't do any less than do more. We have to get on with this project to get the economy going again, to get jobs growing again, to take this challenge on and do something that, as the current White House Chief of Staff is fond of saying, we can't let this crisis go to waste. We've got to build for the future and really build a whole new energy future for our country. We face rising demands on an aging and stressed energy infrastructure that pose real economic risks. In the past, that's been balkanized, no one's responsibility, but these are national problems. They require national solutions. First step, obviously, was the recovery plan that these leaders pushed through Congress and the President signed. It'll create jobs by investing in clean energy programs and reducing oil use. It'll invest in more efficient buildings and wind and solar power. The plan will upgrade 2,000 miles of our electricity grid and put smart meters in 40 million American homes so consumers themselves can begin to reduce their energy bills by increasing efficiency. Those investments are vital to a sustainable economic recovery, but that's just step one. The electricity grid is outdated and inefficient. Outmoded transmission lines prevent moving clean electricity to meet demand to major cities. We've got this tremendous resource in the Southwest, in the Midwest, offshore, but we got to get it to where the consumers live. The current system to rebuild our electricity grid is inadequate. Bracken Hendricks, a senior fellow at CAPS, put out a paper today that focuses on this question of the clean energy grid, on planning, on siting, on cost allocation. So we've got to redouble our efforts, as Boone noted, to end our dependence on oil by building the infrastructure for delivery of clean domestic alternative transportation fuels. We need a fresh approach. We need a plan, as my friend Mr. Pickens says, and that's why we're here to talk about that. We've got great bipartisan leaders from government, business, labor, and the environmental community. I think what we're trying to do is build momentum, Senator Bingaman, for policies that will help put wind at your back so that we can finish the job, take the next step, Congressman Markey, to try to move these issues forward in the Congress. We're not the only summit going on here in Washington today. There's another one down Pennsylvania Avenue that's about to begin. Some of the people who are here at the table are going to have to excuse themselves to attend to other duties, but I'm looking forward to a great conversation. So with that, Tim, I turn it over to you to lead us.
Great. Thank you very much, John, and thank you for pulling us all together. It is customary in a session like this to start with all of the political leadership and do everything at 35 or 60,000 feet. But I'm going to change that a little bit. We've gotten some of the broader perspective, and I'm going to ask for now a time for some commentary on what it means to real people. How is this going to impact people across America? I'm going to ask John Sweeney to perhaps give us a start on that, and then move from there to Van Jones and then Glenn English. It seems to me that the impact that this has on millions and millions of Americans, if this is done right, not only has to be understood, but has to be carefully articulated. John, do you want to give us a start on that? John Sweeney from the AFL-CIO. Sure.
Thank you, Tim. I think the challenges of clean energy and climate change really creates a rare opportunity to do two things at once. Meet the, we all talk about the importance of rebuilding our middle class, and I think that we should be looking also at how to use this opportunity to create good jobs in a new economy. A new U.S. energy strategy can be the foundation of rebuilding the middle class, and if we ensure that the jobs we create are good, innovative jobs here in our country, and that can then become the foundation of a strong new economy. So there are a few basic steps that are essential to all this. We have to solve the workforce problem that we have now. Industry recognizes it. There are not enough trained workers in this field, and it is an aging workforce. So good training is crucial to create good jobs. We need access to this training for a diverse group of residents of local communities. We need apprenticeship programs and labor management partners like those funded in the green jobs section of the recovery package. To create high quality training and good jobs with career ladders. There are some exciting opportunities to marry both education, higher education, and very good skills development programs, and we really need to pursue them. We need to be sure we invest in the materials and the equipment needed for green technology. There's an important opportunity here for the United States to become a leader in technical and manufacturing capacity, and that is why we pushed Buy America language to ensure that we invest the money in building new technology in our own country. We also need to set job standards for our investment so federally funded programs support good living standards. Need to be sure that these jobs include health care, worker safety programs, apprenticeship, and training programs, as well as compliance with existing federal laws such as OSHA and environmental laws. And they should be required to respect workers' organizing rights. A related point is the importance of Congress passing the Employee Free Choice Act to allow workers the freedom to bargain with their employers to make their jobs good jobs. Workers will organize to make their jobs better if we protect their right to do so. Finally, I'd like to say a word about the work in the AFL-CIO right now towards this goal. Mark Ayers, the president of the Building and Construction Trades, is leading a national initiative with their affiliates. There are 11,000 apprenticeship training centers and community organizations to step up the opportunities the green jobs and new energy investments offer. In the past year, the IBEW and the utility workers and their employers have created a series of joint regional training programs for linemen and other skilled workers in the industry. And we at the AFL-CIO have created a Center for Green Jobs that will expand our research, training, and policy work in support of good green jobs. We worked with the Center for American Progress, as you heard this morning, on Wired for Progress because of that economic and environmental opportunity. And I want to commend Bracken Hendricks. I want to commend John Podesta for providing this valuable roadmap. We intend to lead by example as we move ahead. Thanks, Tim.
Senator Worth, could I say something?
Please.
You know, we are very tepid, and as I've gone around the country, find that people are so afraid that the government may be involved in something. If this is going to succeed, smart grid, and continue what we started with this economic recovery package with renewables, we're going to have to accept the fact that that's the way we've always done things. The railroads weren't built just because they thought it was a good idea. The federal government was heavily involved in that. Eisenhower's idea to have a national highway system, the federal government was involved in that. Even something like the telegraph, that came about as a result of government investment. So everyone should get off the kick that this program won't work if the government's involved in it.
Thank you very much. Harry Van Jones has been is the president of Green for All. Probably electrified people at your commitment to how green jobs and neighborhoods and real people come together. Van, give us a sense of that, would you please?
I will. First of all, it's an honor to be here. I want to thank Senator Reid for getting this started. I also want to thank President Clinton for letting me launch Green for All at the CGI. I want to thank Mr. Podesta for including me as a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and I especially want to thank Al Gore for his friendship and mentorship. We've combined to create a Green for All Academy, training people across the United States from disadvantaged communities from Appalachia to Native American reservations to Watts to be a part of this clean energy revolution. So it's just an honor to be here. There's genius around this table. There's also genius around the room. Paul Hawken, Bracken Hendricks, Amy Christensen, Jason Walsh. And there's genius across this country. In the most unlikely places where poor people are hearing about this green opportunity. And I think we've got a moral obligation. There's a moral challenge here, not just a practical challenge or a technological challenge, there's a moral challenge to make sure this green wave lifts all boats. If Dr. King were here, he would say, we need equal protection from the worst of global warming. No more Katrinas. Let's get in front of this thing. He'd also say we need equal opportunity and equal access to the upside of the climate solutions. And we can, in this country, fight pollution and poverty at the same time with green jobs. The green part of the recovery package is the most fiscally conservative thing we've ever done, because every green dollar is going to go out there and work double time, triple time. The dollars that will cut global warming emissions will also cut unemployment. They'll also cut asthma by giving us cleaner air. They'll also lift and raise up our home values by retrofitting buildings. We're the most fiscally conservative people in the history of American politics when we talk about greening this economy. And the opportunity that we've got is to take this work that is the most important work that needs to be done, retrofitting a nation, repowering a nation, and connect that work to the people who most need it. If we can connect the people who most need work to the work that most needs to be done, we can fight pollution and poverty at the same time. And the mechanisms exist. We have programs like Youth Build. We have programs like the Conservation Corps that are taking disadvantaged kids out of rural America, out of urban America, giving them the tools, the training, the technology, telling them to put down those handguns and pick up some caulking guns and be a part of the solution. Let's make sure that every one of those young people can get on a pathway, not just to a green job, but to a green career, where they can go from being the worker to being the manager to being the owner to being the inventor to being the investor. The genius in this country that can be unleashed if we do this the right way will give us not just a coalition we've always wanted, but the country we've always wanted.
Van, thank you very much. And I'm going to come back to Lee Scott and ask him in part to respond to that. But I want to go to you, if I can, Glenn English. And how is the... How is this vision going to reach to rural America, the consumers that you represent? And as you make your comments, I'm going to ask Ken Salazar and Byron Dorgan to listen particularly carefully, because I'm going to ask them to respond to issues that you may raise, as both of them have such responsibility for making this a reality. Former Congressman Glenn English.
Well, thank you very much. Obviously, most of the renewable energy that this country is going to be produced is going to be produced in rural America. And I think rural electric cooperatives, our very name implies the people that we serve. What most people may not be that familiar with is that we serve 70% of the landmass of the United States. So we have a lot of territory, not many people, about 42 million people in 47 states all across this nation. Also, we are a not-for-profit, consumer-owned organization. So we're a consumer group. And I know I speak on behalf of all consumer groups that we're very sensitive with regard to the affordability of electric bills, and certainly that's of concern today. So as we move forward to deal with all of these issues, I hope that everyone around this table will keep that in the back of their mind, that we want to make sure that we make smart decisions, good decisions, and very affordable decisions as far as the American people are concerned, and cost should be a factor. I might also say, Leader Reed, that rural electric cooperatives were established with that partnership between government and people. The federal government made it possible for electric cooperatives to be established and for rural people to receive power. We'd like to return the favor today. We believe that electric cooperatives are well positioned to, in fact, help this country meet its renewable energy needs. And, in fact, a national renewable cooperative has already been established today and is in existence to do that very fact, to generate as much electric power through renewable energy as we possibly can and do it in the most cost-effective manner possible. What we're doing is operating as a cooperative. 930 cooperatives in those 47 states across the country can make contributions to the National Renewable Cooperative to invest in those projects so that we can help keep those electric bills affordable, to do it in the most cost-effective way. The thing that's holding us back is our reason for meeting. It's transmission. And that, I think we have to recognize and understand, is going to be the issue. If we can build that transmission, then I think we can make a significant contribution as far as renewable energy. And I think renewable energy can play a big role. Without that transmission, with all due respect, the Congress can set all the timetables and guidelines they wish. They're not going to be met. We simply can't do it. So transmission is the key, and that's what we've got to deal with, and that's a very tough political issue to come to grips with, and we fully recognize and appreciate that. Let me also say that speed is of the essence. Speed is of the essence. I think that has to be understood. This is not one of those issues we can talk about for another 5 years and then hopefully get underway. We, as far as electric cooperatives are concerned, have two-thirds of the power that our members receive are residential folks. And we're very concerned today that within the next decade, our members may not have enough power if we don't solve this problem, if we don't address this problem. And certainly if renewable energy is going to play the kind of role that we all hope that it will, and still keep the lights on, we've got to move very, very rapidly. So I hope that the group will keep that in mind. And I want to thank everyone around this table and certainly all of our political leadership for taking on what is a very, very difficult challenge and is a problem that we simply must solve. Thank you.
Glenn, thank you very much, and thank you for bringing your constituency into this coalition as well as you have.